Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. It goes without saying that Boston is known for its Tony 19th century architecture, the gaslit streets of Beacon Hill, Charles Bulfinch's Faneuil Hall. But Boston is also famous for its modern architecture, or perhaps infamous, I should say. Boston's 1969 City Hall recently nabbed the number one spot on a list of the world's top 10 ugliest buildings. And it's not alone. Many of the concrete and glass structures around Boston from that era are frequently scorned as dreary, out of place, and user unfriendly. But now, some architecture fans are arguing that Boston's modernist buildings deserve some love. Radio Boston's Adam Ragusea has more.
We are very pleased to be here with you this evening, and thank you very much for coming.
In the sweeping 1970s sanctuary of the Unitarian First Church in Back Bay, the National Trust for Historic Preservation has gathered together just about every architecture and urban planning expert in Boston. This being a city that has no shortage of such professionals, it's a big gathering. Northeast Regional Director for the Trust, Wendy Nicholas, explains why they're here.
We have been concerned for some time about the preservation of our nation's modern landmarks and recent past properties.
What she's talking about, for the most part, is mid-century modernism, the streamlined, convention-shattering era of architecture that reigned supreme from the end of the Second World War to the mid-70s. This is the glass and concrete era. In Boston, think the Harbor Towers, think City Hall, Holyoke Center, and Harvard Square. Buildings that, while lauded by architectural historians, haven't been as popular with the people who use them.
Clearly, in our city, some are being beautifully preserved, and some are decaying before our very eyes.
The National Trust for Historic Preservation is on a 3-year mission operating in 6 cities, Boston among them, to drum up public support for the preservation of modernist structures, many of which are nearing the end of their functional lives. Wrecking balls swing ominously in the distance.
I'm very much reminded of the 1970s when we were losing Victorian buildings left and right before the country had developed an appreciation for Victorian buildings. And so this nation demolished a lot of them before we came to our senses.
Nicholas and her group don't want to see the same thing happen to modernism. So this gathering is all about enlisting Boston's city building and design wonks as missionaries for modernist appreciation.
All right, so now we go for the discussion and the conversation, and Anthony Flint is our moderator this evening.
The author and former Globe reporter puts the big question to an assembled panel.
How would you convince the public that this is important and why?
I think that it's very important to try to put people into the mindset of the people who generated this work and why.
Architect David Fixler.
The fact that Boston had been in an economic torpor for so long, and they saw this as a way to get people to understand not only that Boston is a progressive city in a new sense, but to remind people that Boston really has been, always been, a city capable of reinventing itself.
Fixler points to the urban renewal era ushered in by Mayor John Hines in the 1950s, the raising of the West End and Scully Square in favor of concrete superblock redevelopments. Fixler says that whatever you may think of something like the brutalist Government Center or Paul Rudolph's much maligned Hurley building in the West End, Boston was indisputably renewed.
I think our challenge is we have to teach people how to fall back in love with these places.
Charles Birnbaum heads the Cultural Landscape Foundation, a landscape architecture preservation group in Washington, D.C.
I think the challenge that we've had is that so much of the conversation here in Boston began with Boston City Hall. And I think that's like saying, as an introduction to Shakespeare, we're going to start with Henry IV, parts 1 and 2.
Birnbaum sees a much more viable conversation starter in the Back Bay, in Christian Science Plaza, an example of mid-century concrete with a very different reputation than Government Center.
I think right now, with Christian Science, We have The Taming of the Shrew, or Othello. We have something that is accessible. It's a damn good time. We should build a really big tent, and we should find out all of those things that everyone loves about this and use that as the inauguration for this movement in town, because you're starting with something that everybody loves.
On a sunny summer day, water laps over the infinite edge of the reflecting pool at Christian Science Plaza.
I mean, what a luxury to be in a city and to have an expanse of water like this.
Birnbaum gazes adoringly at the sleek modern hardscape around the pool, the colonnade, the fountain.
I'll reach you.
It's here, along the concrete shores of Christian Science, where Birnbaum suggests a beachhead for the preservation of modernism could be established. The plaza is currently a candidate for landmark status in Boston, and Birnbaum's group is trying to direct national attention to that preservation effort.
You could look at this project, which is the work of a number of master designers, and you can put it in an elite group with a handful of other projects across America, where actually these projects that did reclaim cities actually created something that had a tremendous civicness.
So far, Birnbaum and his fellow preservationists have had a pretty easy time convincing everyone that the plaza deserves love and that it should be protected. The question is, can they whip up similar feelings for other buildings from the same time period? It's easy to love a pool, much harder to love a concrete box.
That report from Radio Boston's Adam Ragusea. To see some pictures of the buildings we've been hearing about, go to wbur.org/Boston. So what do you make of it? Do you like modernist architecture in Boston? Do you think these buildings deserve to be preserved, like the Victorian buildings in the South End or Back Bay? If you've got a thought on this, give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. With us now is architect David Fixler. You heard him in Adam's piece. He's one of the founders of the New England chapter of DocoMoMo. It's the International Working Party for Documentation and Conservation of Buildings, Sites, and Neighborhoods of the Modern Movement. Welcome to Radio Boston, Mr. Fixler.
Thank you.
So let me ask you, while it's all well and good and maybe even noble to want to preserve these buildings around Boston, might there be a lot of people out there who are asking, you know, shouldn't the architecture be good and pleasing in order to warrant preservation?
Well, I think one of the things we have to remember is that most of these buildings, when they were built, were welcomed, and that they're an important reflection of a particular time and a very important time in Boston's history, a time when I think we can that there's a general consensus that the city, in the process of remaking itself, reinvented itself into a much more cosmopolitan, much more kind of world-class city today than it was before 1960, say. It really had gone through, as I said in the earlier piece, a long period of torpor. I think the other thing to remember about these buildings is that they don't age terribly well, but that there are techniques, methods, and design strategies for renewing them that I think can, and even transforming them. I would say that this is not about preserving these buildings in amber at all. It's not the way that you would take a historic house and sort of lovingly restore it. These are big, robust structures, and you can do things to them that I think would make them a lot more appealing to the general public, particularly at the street level.
You know, when I hear you say this, I hear basically, sometimes I think that many architects, and I'm not saying you in particular, but it almost as if you can look at any period of architecture and say it all needs to be preserved. The Victorian era, the modernist era, the whatever era, because each and every one of them signifies something significant in the history of architecture and of that city. But yet cities, as you say, they renew themselves, they turn over, they have their own renaissances. So why is it that you think modernist architecture really deserves a special place of preservation?
I only say it in the sense that we don't want to lose it all. I'm not saying everything should be preserved, but I'm saying that Boston really is a rare city. One does not think of it this way, but it is in fact one of the most important cities in the world in the history of modern architecture. And there are an awful lot of very significant buildings here. And
Boston that way at all.
But in fact, if you look at the record, and the book, for instance, that you have in front of you is a very good example of a sort of sampler of these kinds of things. There's a tremendous number of high quality buildings, and the important thing is that we save what is important, and not just the icons, but large blocks of these buildings, which are good serviceable buildings. Another reason why we are looking much more carefully at preserving buildings in general these days is for reasons of sustainability. Mm. We really have to maximize the resources we have and not keep with the mentality that we're going to build down and tear up all over again.
Well, the book that you mentioned that I have in front of me, it's called Boston Modern, The Spirit of Reinvention. There's a link to it on our website at wbur.org/Boston. Let's get a call in here. Dean's calling from Hyde Park. Welcome to Radio Boston, Dean.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to make a point that I'm not, from an aesthetic point of view, a fan of modernism, but I am a fan of sustainability, and I think that this is a good opportunity for historic preservation and the sustainability movement to come together and just take a stand against the sort of disposable culture that we have, because we in this day and age, we can't be tearing down buildings that aren't even a half century old yet and starting new.
Dean, you know, I know a lot of architects say that there's no more energy efficient building than one that already exists, because you don't have to put that much energy into building it. But, you know, aren't these older buildings less green by definition than, say, modern buildings might be with new technologies and materials?
I mean, I live in a 150-year-old house, so I mean, you're barking up the wrong tree there. I think any building can be retrofitted. I really do. I'm never going to be persuaded that new construction is going to be more sustainable than trying to retrofit an older structure, whether it's 150 or 50 or 25 years old. I mean, there's a lot of technology out there. It's constantly evolving, and mm-hmm. I think there's tons that can be done.
Thank you for your call, Dean. David Fixler, your response to that as well.
He makes a very good point. Dean makes a very good point. The fact is that when you tear down a building, you're not only losing the embodied energy, but you're setting in motion a whole chain of resource impacts in building a new building, which can be avoided if you don't do that. And the fact is there are strategies, very creative strategies, that are emerging for retrofitting these buildings to make them far more energy efficient. So I think all in all, it is a tactic that always needs to be considered and pursued as we move through this.
Let's squeeze another call in here. Pedro's calling from Boston. Welcome to Radio Boston, Pedro.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to say that these buildings are a significant part of our historical record, and we just can't tear them down because we don't like them. And I think that they're part of our history, and if we look at other eras, there's other buildings, you know, be they Victorian or whatever, that we don't like, and we've managed to save them. So I think we need to just save them and put them in that perspective. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your call, Pedro. I mean, David Fixler, if I might ask you about a specific building that Adam mentioned in his piece, and that, of course, is the Christian Science Center, which a lot of people on our show even have called in and said they love. That is one example of modern architecture that they adore, and they can't imagine Boston without it. But why is it then that the Christian Science Center, why shouldn't we just focus our efforts on preserving that one versus using it as, say, you know, a beachhead, as Adam called it, for a preservationist movement across the greater Boston in general?
Well, because, quite frankly, there is a lot more that's worth preserving. I happen to agree with Adam and with a lot of people that the Christian Science Center is a particularly significant piece. I think it's one of the most successful modern urban complexes in the world. It really is. It is at that level. But that's not to say that anything that is not quite at that exalted level should not be preserved. I think even City Hall, City Hall Plaza, certainly City Hall, and City Hall Plaza and the rest of Government Center, there are things that need to be done to those buildings. There is no question of that. There are things that need to be done to the plaza, and these are pretty robust things. But there's a lot of heritage there. There's actually a lot of quality there, and I think, again, with the right strategies with how to handle a streetscape, how to deal with some of the things that are the most egregious flaws, they can be made very, very serviceable buildings, and they are very important buildings. Certainly the modern buildings here at Boston University, you have a whole series of very important buildings by an architect named José Luis Sert, including the law school, the Mugar Library, and the Student Union. And he also did a lot of buildings for Harvard. Now, these are not buildings that are necessarily terribly easy to transform all the time, but they are certainly ones that are well built. They're buildings that are worth investing the time, the energy, and the resources into to make them better and to preserve that part of our heritage.
So part of the tapestry, the complex tapestry of Greater Boston.
That's right.
In general. David Fixler, architect with the New England chapter of DocoMoMo, an international group that works to preserve modernist architecture around the world and here in Boston as well. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Megan.
Well, if you've got something to say, rants, raves, compliments, criticisms about anything you hear on Radio Boston, you can always post a comment on our website at wbur.org/Boston. You can find us on Twitter or Facebook. We're @Radio Boston. Or drop us a line, good old-fashioned telephone, at 617 617- 617-353-1137. That's 617-353-1137. Radio Boston is a production of WBUR with regular contributions from The Angle at boston.com. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.